My name is Ryan Luke Winslade, and I am a PK and middle child. I know what it's like to be a misfit, an oddball, a weirdo, but I'm okay with that. If you're like me, you are most certainly welcome. Even if you're not, you'll hopefully enjoy yourself here on Pastor's Middle Kid anyway. We'll talk about stuff and look at things a little differently. All right, let's get started. G'day and welcome to episode number 62 of Pastor's Middle Kid. My name is Ryan Luke and it's great to have you listening. This week on the show I have my friend and missionary in Lithuania, Jeremy Barry Randall, joining the podcast once again, this time to talk about Easter, what it means to the world at large, what it means to Christians, and exactly why it is that we celebrate it year after year. If you like this episode, then you'll definitely like a couple of episodes that I've had with Jeremy in the past. He's always a fun person to talk to, has some really thoughtful insight, and I think that you will find something of value in this episode. I myself felt like I came through this episode more enlightened with a better understanding of the way that life works than I had prior to talking to Jeremy this time around. So hopefully you'll receive some similar revelation by the end of this episode. This week's unanswered question, I think, comes from the fact that it's only 9 months until I get married, and it is, why does time feel so quick at times, but so slow at others? And even the same experience can feel both fast and slow simultaneously. Unanswered questions. Listener of the week is my future uncle-in-law, Hans Braun. He has listened to a few of these episodes that I am aware of, and he may or may not be one of the regular listeners, but I know that he listens to a lot of podcasts. He works a job that allows him to do that, and the fact that he chooses to listen to mine, I think, is quite a humbling thing for me, and I just think Hans is an all-around great guy. This week, instead of doing a music segment, I'm going to do a book segment. I and my fiancé have recently been getting into Star Wars books. Now, before you label me a nerd and stop listening to this podcast altogether, hear me out. Like you, I'm sure, I've seen the Star Wars movies, and I liked them. There were some moments, some events that were a little bit unexplained or even underexplained that I feel like I could have done with a little more context to, and even going into episode 7 specifically, there's 30 years there. We just don't really know what happens to Luke, Han, and Leia, and how they get to the points that they're at in episode 7. Specifically, something that intrigued me was how Leia and Han drifted apart and their relationship broke down. So I recently read a book called Bloodline by Claudia Gray, which is set about 6 years prior to the events of The Force Awakens. And it provided some great context for not only Han and Leia's relationship, but also the state of the galaxy and how the political system affected the rise of the First Order. Great book. I recommend it. And I've found that doing a little bit of poking around on eBay, you can usually get a Star Wars book for about $15. And that's one of the new canon books, not the Legends. So the stories that actually affect the movie saga as they're unfolding now. Without any further ado, here is my conversation with Jeremy Barry Randall. Oh, yeah.
Oh,
Jeremy Barry Randall, welcome back to Pastor's Middle Kid. This is probably the fourth time or something, isn't it?
Third
or fourth. Anyway, today we are going to be talking about a few different topics relating to holiday church services, like Christmas and Easter, and a few other things as well. But before we get stuck into that, a lot of listeners will be interested to hear what you have been doing since the last time you appeared on Pastor's Middle Kid, when you were talking a lot about the challenges of communicating cross-culturally and being a foreigner in a different nation. So what have you been up to?
Of late, I've gotten very busy with multiple different things. Mm-hmm. We have a really good Bible study happening in our house every Tuesday.
Yep.
That is looking through the inductive method, and we went through Ruth and Jonah, and then we're starting on Acts. And it's just been interesting because the whole group is very cross-cultural.
Hmm.
That's been nice. And then I spent a 24-hour period in Latvia to lead some worship with the YWAM dudes up there, and that was really fun.
Mm-hmm.
But very interesting, because there's that tension of, like, what songs do they sing? I'm singing in English and some of them don't speak English, so what are the easier songs and stuff like that. But it ended up being perfect, and our band was cross-cultural because we had a Latvian, an Australian, a Brazilian, and a Belgian.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so good. It was one of the best bands I played with. And then I'm moving into, like, a assistant teaching role at this private school, I hope.
Okay.
And so I went and met with them today, and so that'll be interesting.
For English
trying
teaching?
I'm not sure yet. I think it'll have that in it, but it'll also be, like, spiritual guidance sort of thing.
Cool.
And then just, like, study helping. Yeah. And today I had to try and describe how we play AFL in Australia in Lithuanian, and I just don't know any of the sports words, so it's funny as. And then
most Aussies don't even know the sports words in English, so
I know.
Yeah.
I just had to act some of them out, which is fun. I've got to learn them. I'm going to sit down today and learn, like, how to say kick.
Yep.
And run and punch.
Yeah.
So that was interesting. Yeah. And then what else have I been doing? Oh, we've had some visitors come through.
Mm-hmm.
And then I've gotten a new housemate. So that's been interesting, seeing how our community changes.
Mm.
Because we did have a French girl here, so that was cross-cultural too. And then I've got to figure out how to stay in the country. So that's interesting too, dealing with, like, red tape that I don't understand and wondering if I should come back to Australia for a bit and then come back. But loving it, because the sun's out today, and that changes everything.
Because it's almost spring. Well, it's kind of spring. It is spring, but
it is definitely spring.
But it
did until it snowed on Easter, and then I was like, "What? That's ridiculous."
Oh, the classic.
We had a week of like 20 degrees, and then now it's -2. What are you guys at? You'd be cooling down, right?
Yeah, it's the weirdest thing, because it's kind of like that, except the opposite here. So it's been getting colder, so we've been having... we had a few days all in a row that were raining and didn't get above 19. And then all of a sudden we had a week straight of 30 degrees, and it was a little weird. Newcastle in particular has been spazzing out a bit and trying to decide whether it's actually autumn or still summer. But there has been the cyclone up north, so the rainfall and stuff have come down the coast from that, and my family on the Gold Coast has been getting quite a lot of rain, and other places like in Brisbane and stuff have been flooded, and the power's been cut and everything. So there has been quite a bit of a strange weather phenomenon happening in Australia of late, and I think that's beginning to die down. Definitely the effects of the cyclone, the immediate effects have dissipated. It's just the lingering floods and some rain and stuff. But hopefully that rain will help things cool down, because I'm actually looking forward to the cold weather, knowing that it's... In Newcastle, it's never going to get below what, 15 degrees Celsius during the day. So yeah, it seems a little bit pathetic coming from somebody that used to live in Canberra and has even been in the States in November and felt it get down to negative -5. It's been a little funky, but I am looking forward to this winter because it'll feel cold, even though it isn't really cold. Then I've never really been a big fan of coastal weather, so there's that too. Anyway, enough talk about weather, because I'm sure everybody is...
It's just so fascinating.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, I wonder how the weather is in Lithuania today. But it's good to hear that it is sunny and it's beginning to warm up. It's beginning to feel like spring. So, yeah, you mentioned Easter and how there was a lot of snow. How did that affect church attendance on Easter?
The church we went to was packed.
Okay.
And I was told by some of my Catholic housemates that Catholic cathedrals were packed.
Mm-hmm.
And they even had some parades outside.
Wow.
And then the church that I attend in Vilnius, because I was in a different city, have this dawn service at like 7, and then they have another service at 10, and then they have a separate service on Friday nights, which I don't remember ever doing in Australia.
Not on Friday nights. No.
Yeah, because midnight services are Christmas, right?
Yeah, for some churches. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I've done that in Australia, but I don't think I've ever done Easter stuff. So here it seems like similar to Australia, but on like supercharge, that Easter is quite an important celebration.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's fair enough. And the fact that you did just come out of a 9-month winter or something like that, I'm sure the snowfall on Easter wouldn't have been a problem.
Nope.
Okay. Well, that's interesting for me to hear, because from what I've heard you say, Lithuania seems, and even that pocket of Europe, seems to be a lot more traditionally Christian in some regards than Australia is. A lot more recently, maybe, the generations have considered themselves right across the board to be Christian. Whereas with us, I think you'd say our great-grandparents' generation, there was probably about 80% nominal Christian right across the board. But then as the generations are going along, it's becoming less and less, and people are no longer seeing the need to gather in church buildings. And even on Easter here in Newcastle, I can't speak for other churches because I only go to one. As we talked about back in episode 20 something when I had you on about interdenominationality. I think that was episode 23.
That was a good one.
If anyone's willing to dig back through the archives,
you should listen to it.
That is a good one. But at my church, I was expecting to see some of the families of the attendants or something like that. But we didn't have anyone that wasn't a regular member of the church. And for those of you that don't know, I go to a church that is 90% people over the age of 65. And it was basically the same seating arrangement as any other Sunday. And on Good Friday, I think there was a couple of visitors, but they were friends or family members of normal congregants anyway. But on Easter Sunday, it was no one extra. And I found that to be a little bit bizarre, but I know that other churches did have a solid influx, churches that weren't as traditional. And I know the local church, the Granary, often puts on a production every Easter and Christmas. So they often get a large amount of families and unchurched folks that go to that because there's some kind of entertainment value with the play, but then there's also a message that gets brought out of it. So I think that's really cool. It's a great way to present the gospel at Easter time and Christmas. But maybe they took all the non-churchgoers. That's right. Yeah. So we were just left with the usuals. But I want to talk about this phenomenon of having what some people might call holiday Christians that go to church on Easter and Christmas. and what that means for those people that do it themselves, and what that means for other people, the regular church attendants. So first of all, what do you think it means for somebody to attend church only on Christmas and Easter? Are they doing it out of obligation? Are they doing it out of maybe a respect for tradition? Or would it be more of a trying to get a public image, wanting people to know that they still kind of dig this stuff, even if they don't regularly dig it?
Yeah.
What are your thoughts?
The positive version of me would like to think it's like the Jews and their feasts. Mm-hmm. And so they would have their years punctuated by these amazing gatherings with a lot of food and celebration.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like a part of their communal rhythms.
Yeah.
And I would think people are like that. Like, oh, Easter is that time that we get together, we eat, we celebrate, even if we don't necessarily understand what we're celebrating completely. And that'll absolve the rest of my year almost, or that'll affect the rest of my year positively because I celebrated this time, or because I remembered Jesus this one time.
Mm-hmm.
And then the negative part of me is like, that's what Christianity is to them. Like I go to this festival or this other festival once or twice a year, and then I don't have to do anything more with God because that's what he expects of me, because that's the faith I was handed to by my parents. And like growing up a Protestant pastor's kid, I always understood that was Catholicism. Like all Catholics just go to church twice a year and they go to confession sometimes, and that's all Catholicism is.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's been like this wonderful experience living with two quite passionate Catholics that are very involved in their communities that show a different side of that. And so the positive part of me is definitely that a lot of people go to Easter and Christmas because it's something they want to do and it's something they enjoy. And like for me, because the church I grew up in didn't really believe that we needed to celebrate those two celebrations, so we didn't go to church on Sunday on Easter or Christmas.
That's interesting.
Yeah, which was super weird. But now I really like them. Like it's such a good part of the year to celebrate certain things.
Mm-hmm.
Like what did you do growing up with Easter?
Well,
especially
Easter, we'd have to go to all the church services. There would be a service on often Thursday night, which would be the Maundy Thursday service that we, as the kids of a pastor, wouldn't have to go to, but we could if we wanted. Friday morning, Good Friday, we'd have to go, and it'd usually be at the traditional service time if there was a traditional service and a family service. And then Easter Sunday, we'd have to go to church as well. But I, like your recent revelation, I found that going to church on those days was actually a really great way to, I think, bring me back to the focus of what it was actually about. And in recent years, as I've grown more fond of traditional churches, not for the sake of getting stuck in what a lot of modern Christians would call the religious rut or the religious spirit or whatever, but for the sake of the beauty of the reverence and the different things that the church has to offer, I think I've been I'm a lot more open on those days to really focus intensely on why we're actually there and what the significance of the day is. And so when I see people that aren't usually attending church going to church on those days, I guess the positive part of me has a lot of hope, like you, that there is something significant and profound that they are experiencing that day that impacts them for the rest of the year. And at the same time, it also makes me sad that there isn't any conviction inside of them. Maybe there is, and I don't know their story, but there doesn't seem to be any conviction inside of them to maintain that throughout the year. So I think I'm a little bit torn when I see people, even that come to baptism services, or christening services, dedication, whatever you want to call the child sprinkling of water ceremony.
Yeah.
People that come to those and they're dressed up in their finest suits because they don't know what to wear to church, so they dress in their finest just in case, and then they look extremely overdressed even compared to the most conservative folks in the congregation. When I see people like that, I think I really want to be hopeful that there's something in the service that impacts them and brings them closer to God. And I know that God is quite capable of doing something, even through a traditional church, that will have that lasting impact. But then a large part of me suspects that it has no bearing at all on what they do for the rest of their lives. And they attend it out of obligation or out of respect, I think, for the person that they're christening, or if it's a family affair and they go to church on Christmas just because that's what they do, it's part of their routine, then I guess we can always hope that God can work through it. But it is really hard as a regular churchgoer to see that there doesn't seem to be that conviction held throughout the year. And you can tell at these places, you can tell the people that regularly attend church at a different congregation that are just coming to your specific building for that day. You can tell those people apart from people that don't usually go to church from a mile away, just because of the way that they act and the way that they are really hesitant about doing anything just in case it's offensive or something. And I think there is quite a skewed understanding of what Christianity is to people that aren't inside of it. And maybe in some regards that's a good thing, but I know in a lot of ways that's not a good thing, that our image that we present, it doesn't have to be flashy and professional, but as long as it's authentic and people can tell that we love each other, I think that is the most important thing to get across. And that's often what doesn't get communicated when we're doing our best to accommodate either the particular church service or marketing campaigns for Easter, bribing people to come to church with Easter eggs and church productions. Not that church productions aren't good. I think there's real value in them.
Like or Easter eggs.
Yeah, and Easter eggs are good too. Exactly. But it's all about the motivation behind doing it. And I think a church like the Granary does a great job because they really care about impacting the people of the city of Newcastle and presenting the gospel to them in a way that maybe they haven't seen before. And then there are other churches that do it to draw a crowd and then out of that kind of do a bit of a bait and switch and, you know, slap them in the face of the Bible as a result.
Yeah.
But
do you think there is people that go to church regularly who are exactly the same as those who go once or twice a year, but they just feel more obligation to go more regularly? Yeah, that's my question.
Yeah, I think so. I know that there are a lot of people with busy schedules that have the opportunity to go to church, but maybe something else seems to be a more pressing need. But often when it comes to that time of year when people are going on holidays or stores shut down, like is the case in Good Friday and Easter Sunday, where they can actually slow down and there isn't anything to draw their attention away from it. It's kind of a forced time to rest. I think there are Christians that attend church in those situations because they have a greater ability to.
No, I was more asking, do you think people who actually do go to church regularly sit in church thinking, I don't know why I'm here. It's not going to affect my life. And then they go through their lives unaffected by meeting, but they go because they feel like they're supposed to go.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yep. I totally misunderstood you. But
but you said something that I was like, whoa, yeah, slow down. And that's how they are allowed to go to church.
Mm. Yeah. Okay. Well, I think that's a very poignant matter. And I think that there is a lot of truth to the statement that some people go to church and they don't know why. It's just what they do. Totally. And I think in situations like that, I don't know, I tend to be a bit of a hopeful person, where if I see anybody putting themselves in a position where they can interact with God in any way, I tend to be hopeful that they do have a relationship with God and that God is working in their lives. So even just having them come along to church and be a bit stale, I don't know. I think there is a particular aspect of church that everybody can fit really well into. And that may mean that there is a small group that a few people really, they can open up in that and be ministered to. But when they come to a big congregational church, it's not the same for them and they feel less need to do that. But if they keep on going to that other small group, then that's really good. And that's probably what they need more than anything. Maybe the people that attend the big church are the ones that do need a bit of a shake up. They need a change. They need to attend a different kind of meeting, a different kind of gathering. And that is the way for them to grow in their faith, is to do something different because they've dug themselves into the ground and in that way lost, I guess, the passion that they may have initially had. And now I know that there are some Christians too that don't go to church because they don't like it. And as I've just said, there are other ways for people to have community that are really beneficial spiritually. And I wanted to bring up a scripture from Hebrews. Hebrews chapter 10, from 19 onwards, there's some instructions about having faith and having the assurance of faith. But there's one particular passage from verse 24 to 25 that says, "Let us consider how to stir up one another to love and good works, not neglecting to meet together, as is the habit of some, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day drawing near." My pastor read that out a couple of weeks ago at church, and it struck me because I think I'd been hearing more from a few different podcasts that some people had decided that church wasn't really giving them anything, so they'd stop going and they'd listen to sermons on a podcast or something like that, and that's how they would get their spiritual food. But when I heard him say that, "Let us not neglect to meet together, as is the habit of some, but encourage one another," I think that opens up a different side of the argument to maybe what some of these people are hearing, and that is the community, it's the interaction with other people in order to encourage one another and stir each other on towards love. How do you feel that neglecting to meet together and maybe only coming to church on Christmas or Easter, how do you feel like that could throughout the rest of the year have a negative impact on the people that decide to not attend church regularly because it doesn't really give them anything?
I can speak, like, personally, mm-hmm. I improve in skills, in thinking, in holiness by being irritated by other people. So I've always loved living with other people. I've always loved being like in intimate teams with people because it's irritating. Mm. And so living with Michael Cook for 3 years in Lewis House, was so interesting because we're not the same kind of people. No. We have very different interests. At the time, we had different, like, sleeping patterns.
Wow.
But because we agreed to get a similar pattern so that we could encourage each other in, like, quiet times and stuff like that, and it was irritating at first, but after a while it got so good because the irritation went away because we were constantly with each other. Mm. But if I was only with him once a week, the irritation would continue because we wouldn't work on what was irritating us. Mm. It would just, yeah. And so I think those people who have no irritation or have no spurring onto better holiness, may not even think about it because they're not irritated because they only come once a year to the cross or to Christian community. Mm-hmm. Which is, it's like playing guitar too. Like I don't play guitar very much at home, but I'm playing guitar constantly with other people, so I'm improving all the time because of that.
Yeah.
But if I didn't play guitar for a year, I wouldn't get better and my calluses would go away. So when I do come back, it would hurt so much that I wouldn't necessarily want to play it anymore. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's why people don't get much out of church, because it's irritating and they don't like that, so they avoid it, and therefore the irritation doesn't go away. Mm.
It's iron sharpening iron. And if you're not continually being thrust against each other and sharpening each other, then you're growing blunt. I think that's what you're saying.
But the first, if you're blunt, that first sharpening moment, if iron could feel, would hurt so much because you're not used to it. But if I am constantly playing guitar and constantly being irritated by Michael Cook or constantly doing things that make me grow, I get used to the growth.
Yeah.
And so even though it's still irritating, I get into a rhythm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I assume it's the same with working out, even though I haven't really done a lot of working out in my life.
Yeah.
Like your muscles get used to being destroyed, so you just keep going.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's quite similar. I really like the imagery of the callous fingers for that. I think that's a really good one. But
yeah.
I guess, muscles being ripped and repaired is a quite similar process. I've recently started helping Tristan Harris, who's getting married in a few months, started helping him get in shape for his wedding, and consequently helping myself get in shape for my wedding. So we've been pumping iron together, and I've taught him a few exercises and made sure his technique was good. And the first week he did it, he absolutely hated me because I was telling him to do this particular action that he wasn't used to, and so his body just couldn't do it very much. And then when you try and do that action 3 times in a row, it hurts even more. But then the next week, because he knows how it feels and he expects a certain kind of pain, and his body has grown in response to the previous hardship that he's undergone, then the next time he can do more and he can do it better, and he's actually a little more excited or willing to go through it. So I think that's a really good point, that being in community with people and meeting together regularly is it's not only helping each other stay strong, but it is preventing ourselves from getting weak. Does that make sense?
Exactly.
So maintaining a certain level of strength at least, and the ideal is to continue growing and getting stronger.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
All right. So the next thing I want to talk about is related to the Christmas Easter Christian, and that is the purpose of revisiting these two specific points in the year. So every December, all the messages are talking about Advent and coming up to the birth of Jesus, And then when he's born, it's this big climax at the end of the year, which I think is really cool, even though he wouldn't have been born then. It's a great time of year to have it because it helps us to, I think, correct our focus towards the end of the year when all the things that you wanted to do throughout the year are building to a point and there's a little bit of pressure to get stuff done and get things in order for the next year, to remember that it is about love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, and so on. The spirit of Christmas being the Holy Spirit, that's what it's all about, and the coming of Jesus as this major event. And then every March or April, we get Easter. And at that time, it's a little bit funkier because there isn't this widespread knowledge of what exactly Easter means to the populace. Because to Christians, in Christendom, we have this understanding of what the sacrifice of Jesus is. And we know that Easter is the sign of ultimate love. But outside of that, everybody just knows that we get Friday and Sunday off and the shops are closed and we're kind of forced to be at home or with friends and
and eat a lot.
Yeah, it's kind of like a Christmas again, except a little less clear what it's actually about. And you're with family again, but there's so much chocolate that it just gets a little bit confused. So let's briefly talk about the general populace's perception of what Easter is, and then we'll get back to the purpose of revisiting these two events each year. So what, from what you can see, what is your understanding of a non-Christian's perspective of Easter?
I think in Australia it's different because Australia has never aligned as a Christian nation.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I agree with you that Easter just doesn't make sense to anyone. Because the other thing is, we don't have a famous sport game connected to it.
Mm.
Like Christmas, you're waiting for the Boxing Day test.
Yeah.
But for Easter, it's like, what are we waiting for? Like, there's no cricket or anything. I don't even know.
There's a rugby league match that happens usually on Easter Monday or something like that, but it's usually just a club match, so it's nothing special.
Yeah, but then it's funny from my perspective too, because until I was 20, I went camping every year. Like we left Canberra and didn't do any Easter stuff. We just went into the bush, and so even though I was a pastor's kid, it was like I was just a non-Christian because we didn't celebrate the normal reason for the holiday, which is so strange now that I think back. But like, because this country is in the apex of Orthodox Christianity, Catholic Christianity, the holiday means a lot more, I think, because people at least call the days what they're called, and then Lent for the month up until now is quite a big thing in the calendar. Whereas I don't think I've ever done Lent. Have you ever done Lent?
I did Lent for the first time this year.
Okay.
I gave up chocolate, which is something that I gave it up for a year and a half or something like that already, last year. So I already knew how that felt. So I don't know if it was necessarily too much of a sacrifice, but it was definitely good for me to give something up, something that I see as a bit of an extra, a bonus. So when it came to Easter Sunday, I've been, the last couple of years, I've been fasting from Good Friday after breakfast until Easter Sunday breakfast, seeing it as a bit of a, while Jesus was in the tomb, I'm not going to be eating anything. So his tomb is full and my stomach is empty. And then when his tomb's empty, my stomach is full because I have Easter breakfast. And this year I had the addition of eating chocolate on Sunday as well, which was a little bit weird for me because it's only been 8 months or so since I started eating it again. So I'm still getting used to it. It still feels new and
so and tasty.
And tasty, yes, definitely. Though this year I was thinking maybe I like dark chocolate more because too much milk chocolate definitely makes me feel sick. But I never feel the need to eat too much dark chocolate.
That's a good point.
So
neither.
Anyway, so I did Lent for the first time this year. Did you do Lent this year?
I was planning to do Lent. I was going to give up coffee and podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
So for the first 2 weeks, I didn't drink any coffee. No, I accidentally drank one coffee because I was in autopilot in a cafe, and then I was like, no! But then I gave up podcasts for the whole month, except I continued listening to one, but I don't remember what it was. And so, like, last week... No, it wasn't this one. It was... Yeah. So when you swapped to your latest server, I was like, oh, cool, this was a good time to reload it. But because everywhere I walk, I'm listening to a podcast. Everywhere I bus, I'm listening to a podcast. And so I was like, all right, God, I'm just going to give you a month of my brain so that as I walk along, I'm either thinking about you or thinking about life or thinking about what I'm seeing.
Mm-hmm.
And it was awesome. But I definitely gave up the coffee thing because one of my friends sent me 2 bags from Germany of beans. And I was like, I can't leave these to just sit for 2 weeks. I've got to drink them now. So that wasn't good Lent.
Fair enough. So there is more of an observance of the actual season of Easter than in Lithuania. What do Lithuanians do on that weekend, on Friday through Sunday?
From what I heard, it starts on the start of the week. I think there's something special on Sunday or Monday to, like, bring in the Holy Week. And then there's
Passover starts around then, I think.
Okay.
Usually.
They must do something for that. And the start of Lent, they do something special because one of my housemates came back with, like, a charcoal cross on his forehead. And I was like, what's that?
Whoa.
Ash Wednesday. Is that what it's called?
Anyway. Yes.
It had something to do with Ash.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and then they have a big thing Friday. And then I think they also do a big fast thing of not eating meat on one of the days.
Okay.
But then the last day is quite big. And it's funny that they're more into it here, but they don't have Friday off. They only have the Monday off.
Interesting.
And everyone seems to go back to their hometowns.
Huh.
And so most of my friends are students here that live in a small town, so everyone left.
Hmm.
Which makes sense, I suppose.
Yeah.
So I went to a different town with my housemate and her sister and hung out with their parents. And it was so good.
Mm-hmm.
But their traditions are more... Oh, and they have really weird egg traditions where you fight people with eggs or you roll them further than everyone else or you paint them. They don't really do chocolate eggs.
Okay. Okay.
That was cool.
Yeah. All right. That sounds like a more traditional approach. A less commercial approach, I guess, to Easter. That's cool.
You're buying other people's eggs.
Yeah. That's good business for them, I guess.
Super good business for the chickens.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, that is interesting how in certain parts of Europe specifically there's quite a strong emphasis on the religious observance of these days, and then you get to somewhere like North America or Australia and there's vague commercialism where there's rabbits and chocolate and that's it.
Yeah. And bilbies.
And bilbies, yeah, chocolate bilbies and who knows what else. It's weird. It's very weird. Anyway, so that's... We've just gone off on a tangent talking about Easter and what it means in the countries that we're in. But let's flip it back to the reason that we revisit Christmas and Easter each year. What do you think that is, Jeremy?
I think it's partly to do with the tension of Jesus being man and God.
Hmm.
So I think Christmas is all about... Jesus came to this earth, he was fully man, he was fully birthed of a woman, and then he lived. And then you get to Easter, and it's all about Jesus actually died. Like, he actually went on the cross for our sins and ceased to breathe.
Mm.
And then he miraculously came out of the grave. And that all influences our lives now.
Mm.
And so sometimes I don't understand, like, the effect of my life after Christmas. Like, what is that all about? But it's definitely about, like, whoa, Jesus was definitely a person. Yeah, let's give each other presents. Whereas Easter is this amazing journey of, whoa, he walked to the cross and then died, and now my sins are forgiven and I get to live forever.
Mm.
But I think your question is more to do with why we return to it. Like, why didn't we just celebrate it once in our lives and then forget about it, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Or at least revisit it less.
Yeah. And I think it goes back to that once again, like, God knows us really well and knows that we forget so quickly, and we get a lot out of celebrating together. And you look at the biblical, like, Jewish calendar, and they had so many feasts and so many remembrances and so many cool stuff together. And maybe we should have more than we do, but at least we have two that, for whatever reason, even non-Christian society has been like, all right, these are two good holidays that we should observe, and we get to remember God's goodness to us by eating lots of food.
Yeah.
Which I think is beautiful.
It's interesting you say it helps us remember Jesus' humanity, because now that I think of it, the church, the liturgical readings and everything that go from Christmas to Easter, all about the life of Jesus, and there's a strong emphasis on the Gospels. And then once it gets past Easter, there's Pentecost, and then as soon as Pentecost happens, who knows where in the Bible we're going to end up. We might go back to the Old Testament, we might end up in the epistles, we usually do for very long stretches of time. Yes. So that usually, especially in the epistles, is all about the deity of Jesus, the God nature. So that's a really interesting point, that from December through April, we often focus on the humanity, and then from May through November, we focus on the divinity.
Yeah.
Really interesting.
It's so cool.
Mm.
And that was like, a lot of the big arguments in the early church were, was he all God, or was he just a little bit God, or was he all man? No, he probably wasn't all man, and what does that mean? Mary was, and et cetera, et cetera. So it's cool that the church is still doing that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, that's really cool, because it is such a, it's as confusing as the Trinity.
Oh, yes.
And I know that as pastors' kids, we can very quickly say, I understand what the Trinity is.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
St. Patrick had his clover with the three different leaves, the petals, but it was still the one thing. And so we understand the concept. But if we really get into it, how the heck is the Father the Son, and the Son the Spirit, and the Spirit the Father?
Yep.
It's just so confusing. It's very difficult for us to actually comprehend it, because it's beyond us. It created us.
Yeah.
And then Jesus being entirely God and entirely man doesn't make sense to us, because he is entirely God.
Yeah.
So I guess that makes sense that we never quite figure it out. But I think the best thing we can do is to continue to wrestle with it. And as you've just hinted at there, maybe the entire church calendar is that. It's a wrestle with the humanity and the divinity of Jesus.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Because, and it affects us, because if he's only a good man, then that depowers a lot of what he did on earth and after earth. But then if he's all God, he didn't really adopt us into the Godhead, because he was not man. So he couldn't represent us to God.
Mm-hmm.
He has to be both. And so your brain's just like, what? No! Why can't this be black and white?
Yeah. Oh my goodness. Why couldn't we have created God? Huh.
Exactly. Yeah. It would make it all different.
Yeah. Oh,
and everything. Terrible.
Yes. Yes. That would make the genocides of the Old Testament actually as horrific as most people think that they are.
Yep.
And that's a question for an entirely different time, but something that you wanted to bring up that we'll touch on briefly and then probably go into more next time you're on the podcast is this issue of spiritual strongholds.
Yep.
And I'm going to let you take this for the next 5 minutes or so as we give it a once over, because it was something that you brought to the table. Yep. In our pre-podcast Facebook message exchange. So take it away.
It is one of those things that I think I could talk about for ages, and mm-hmm. I have so many questions that I want answered. But mm-hmm. the idea of how does our physical and natural decisions affect the spirit world, and then how does that affect future generations of physical behavior? So mm-hmm. in a small, like in a micro setting, if I am addicted to gambling and all my life I gamble and it affects my family in a physical nature because we have no money and I'm always out gambling,
yeah,
that will affect the spirit world of my relationships with my family.
Mm-hmm.
And then how does that affect the environment that my son grows up in, or mm-hmm. his son grow up in? And mm-hmm. then let's say his son is into gambling and it's yeah. affected by my gambling.
Mm.
How does he then deal with the spirit world of that gambling addiction? Or do I have to do something as the person who's responsible for that? And then if you go to a macro setting, what if all of Australia were addicted to gambling for a generation? Mm-hmm. What does the next generation of Christians or non-Christians have to do to deal with the spirit world that has been made or affected because of gambling addiction?
Mm.
And how many generations does it affect?
So it's the ripple effect and the generational sin.
Yeah.
The spiritual consequences of physical actions. Wow. Yep. I think that's one thing that is not going to be easily answered.
Nope.
And I'm not just saying that to get out of talking about this for the next few minutes, but there's something about the spiritual nature of reality that we cannot grasp because yep. of our physical limitations. And it always strikes me as a little bit funky when somebody says, God gave me revelation that this means this spiritually. And then... Yep. How are you meant to respond to that? Do you say, well, if God said it, then that's gospel and we have to go with it? Yeah. Or is it, does God reveal certain things to certain people that are not supposed to be taken right across the board?
Yeah.
So it comes down to an individual revelation level. Like if somebody sees a bunch of angels or demons around a certain group of people, and that's how they yeah. will see them forever. But if they tell everybody that that's what is happening, then they may, I don't know, there might be some people in that group that aren't affected by it, and then they get labeled yep. like that. And then so many consequences that come out of spiritual claims, and that's the main reason that heresy can be so dangerous.
Yep.
It can easily snowball because people believe it as fact because somebody claims that they had a revelation. Then we get something like Mormonism, which is not Christianity because it was revealed to one person supposedly by God, and then he yep. claimed that it was gospel, and then everybody had to believe him because they had no choice, and then that became yeah. their reality. So with generational sins and things like that, my understanding is, if you are aware of some kind of problem that your father or grandfather had, or mother or grandmother, then there is a real need to make a stand against it, because it's in the bloodline, the propensity to do whatever it is. If it's gambling, then the genes you pass on to your son are going to be predisposed to making those types of decisions that lead to a gambling addiction.
Yep.
Just because of the way that your mind works. So in that way, it's like an extreme self-awareness. It's a family awareness that you need to actively oppose.
Yep.
Because of the, like I said, the genetic inclination that we have towards certain sins because of how we're wired. When it comes to the generational curses and blessings, I've always found it interesting that God says he holds the sins of the father, the sins of somebody to the third and fourth generation, but
yep.
he holds the blessing to 1,000 generations or whatever it is, like a huge amount yes. of generations, 10 or whatever. And the difference there, I think, is that the power that each of us have to affect our future offspring and their genetic lines is enormous. And we don't quite grasp yep. that because small decisions we make now seem small to us, but it's a ripple effect that could very easily go one way or the other. So I think yes. it's having more of a cosmic mindset of what we're doing right now, knowing that what we do affects the future in an enormous way.
Yeah.
Especially when it comes to sin, and especially when it comes to acting righteously. There are some things yeah. obviously that will have very little effect, like if you're into planes and then your son's not into planes, then oh well. I mean, that has no bearing whatsoever, but when it comes to having an inclination towards being a generous person, you have so much potential to enable future generations of your family to be generous people. And that is just because the way that we are genetically designed is not just physical, but it's spiritual as well. So inside of us is the spiritual DNA, not just the physical DNA, towards these different habits or positions that we can take.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that answered anything that you put out there or whether it was just me rambling about nonsense, but what are your thoughts about that? And then we'll wrap it up and put a pin in it and get back to it.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's the start of it. Like figuring out what parts are physical that we can choose to not and to stand against or to retrain in ourselves how to think and mm-hmm. behave. And then what parts are we responsible for interceding spiritually for mm-hmm. on behalf of others? And then what parts we aren't responsible for and cannot change? And then we need to step back from feeling guilty about mm-hmm. that. And this all came up because of a few weeks ago, we had some times of intercession about something that my bloodline was not involved mm-hmm. in, I myself was not involved in, couldn't have been involved in because it happened decades yep. ago. And I just stood there thinking, God, I don't feel guilty for this, and I don't feel like I can take responsibility for this, but what can I do in this situation, mm-hmm. if anything at all?
Mm-hmm.
And so I walked away from it thinking, there's got to be something I can do, but just not right now. Mm. So I think this is the start of an interesting conversation that I think I need to research a ton, but I think it could have national implications for me as an Australian.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, how about we promise the listeners that in a couple of weeks we'll get back to this conversation after having done some research on both our ends, and we'll give them exactly what they want, which is to have some kind of closure in that conversation. But this as a whole has been an episode primarily talking about Easter and modern cultural attendances or tendencies towards Easter. And look, my personal standout moment from this was the revelation that maybe the church calendar is all about the humanity and divinity of Jesus. I think that is a really cool revelation. So I hope everyone else has had a thought-provoking listen to this podcast. This is Pastor's Middle Kid. My name's Ryan Luke. That is Jeremy Barry Randall. I'm pointing to him, but you can't see because this is podcast and it's not visual. So follow Pastor's Middle Kid on Facebook or Twitter or WordPress. You can find it at pastorsmiddlekid.wordpress.com. That's also where I upload my new podcast episodes, and the feed goes from there into iTunes because I've worked out how to beat the system and not pay $15 a month. Take that.
Take that, system.
Exactly. Thanks for listening, everyone. Tune in next time, please. I'll be here, and hopefully you will as well. Uru. You fall off a carpet, hearts into